I'm sure most of you will understand the importance of leisure. Because it's only when you have leisure that you learn. The meaning of that word leisure, according to a very good dictionary, means not having any occupation at the time when we are talking over together. Not to be occupied all the time, psychologically, physically, or intellectually. Just have plenty of leisure so that one can learn. That's really the meaning of a school, where one can learn easily, without conflict, when your mind is not occupied with so many other problems. So, if I may suggest this morning, and during the rest of the other mornings that we meet here, that you are not occupied, that your minds are not filled with problems, anxieties, occupations, trying to solve problems, but that we are here together to have actually leisure, so that when we talk over things together, as we're going to, that leisure, which is the mind not being occupied, not chattering, not trying to find out, just having plenty of leisure, so that in that state one can learn. There are two types of learning. Either memorize what is being said, which is what most of us call learning, or learning through observation, and therefore not storing it up as a memory and then looking, observing through memory. I'm going to explain that, as we said, there are two types of learning. One is to learn something by heart, so that you store it up in the brain and act according to that knowledge, skillfully or not skillfully. That's what most of us do. When we go to school, college and university, we store up a great deal of information called knowledge, and according to that knowledge, act beneficially for oneself or for society, skillfully or incapable of acting simply directly. That's one type of learning with which we are all very familiar, which we do all the time. Every experience is stored up as knowledge and acted according to that action taking place according to that knowledge. So that's very clear. As with most of us, it is so. Then there is another kind of learning, which probably you're not quite accustomed to, because we are such slaves to habits, to tradition, to every form of conformity. There's the other type of learning, as we're saying, which is to observe. Observation implies to see without the accompaniment of previous knowledge, to look at something as though for the first time, afresh. And if you observe things afresh, then there is not the cultivation of memory. Because each time you observe, and throughout that observation, you learn, store it up as memory, then the next time you observe, you are observing through the pattern of memory. Therefore, you see never anything fresh. So, as we are saying, leisure is extraordinarily important. Not to have a mind that's constantly occupied, constantly chattering. Because it's only in that unoccupied mind a new seed of learning can take place, which is entirely different from the memory, cultivating memory, storing up as knowledge and acting from that knowledge. As we were saying, there is another kind of learning, which is to observe the tree, the skies, the mountains, the beauty of the mountains, the light among the leaves. And that observation, if stored up as memory, will prevent the next observation being fresh. You get this point? It's quite simple. That is, if you observe your wife or your girlfriend or boyfriend, if you observe, can you observe without the previous recording of the incidents and all the rest of it in that particular relationship? If you cannot observe or watch the other without the previous knowledge, then you learn much more. I wonder if you're understanding what I'm talking about. Am I conveying anything or nothing at all? See, for me, the most important thing is, among a great many other things, is to observe. And we mean by observing, not to have the division between the observer and the observed. Most of us have this division. The observer, who is the total summation of past experiences, knowledge, and all that, which is the past, then that past observes. So there is a division between the observer and the observed. That is the source of conflict. Right? I wonder if you see this. As we said yesterday, wherever there is division, there must be conflict between races, between people, between two individuals, husband, wife, boy or girl, nations, divisions of belief, divisions of churches, all any form of division must bring about conflict. That's clear. Now, is it possible not to have that conflict at all, right through one's life? You understand my question? We traditionally accept this conflict, this struggle, this everlasting fight, not only physiologically, that is to survive, but also psychologically. The good and the bad and so on, so on, the division. So is it at all possible to live a life without a single effort? Because if there is constant effort, there is no peace. Right? Please, we are communicating with each other. You're not listening to a speaker agreeing or disagreeing, but we are sharing the thing together. We are traveling together. We are concerned about all this together. Therefore, it is ours, not mine, or it's ours. So we are asking, as man has lived centuries upon centuries, a life of battle, conflict, both outwardly and inwardly, constant struggle to achieve, and the fear of not, of losing, dropping. We all are familiar with all this. Now we're asking, is it possible not to have any conflict or even a shadow of conflict in one's life? Otherwise you can never have peace. You may talk endlessly about peace, but there will be no peace as long as man is conditioned to the acceptance of conflict. So we are asking, is it possible to live a life, in daily life, in all strata of life, both outwardly and inwardly, a life that is absolutely without conflict? Now when you listen to that, don't please, if I may suggest, accept it or deny it. Don't say it's not possible. Oh yeah, or say it is possible. If you say it is possible, then just an idea, and therefore valueless. But if you say it's not possible, then you block yourself. So we are together investigating this question. And investigation can only take place when you have left. Leisure being your mind not being occupied with other problems. We are here together because you have leisure this morning, you came. Near or far, from far, and together having leisure, which means a mind that is not occupied with daily problems and therefore willing to learn and see if that is possible to live that way all one's days. Are we meeting each other? Somewhere. Not verbally, I hope, but actually. Because it's our problem. Because life is becoming more and more difficult. Mere survival, physical survival, is becoming enormously difficult. Overpopulation, national divisions, economic equality, you know, all the rest that is happening. Life is becoming extraordinarily difficult. And the mere physical survival only is conditioned that to the fact that one must make tremendous effort to achieve a position and hold it. You know all this. And if you don't hold it, if you don't struggle, you might lose everything. You might be crushed. You might fall down and all that. So, we are asking a very, very serious question. Do please give your attention to it. Is it possible to live without a single shadow of conflict? Conflict exists when there is a division, the me and the you, we and they. The American, the Russian, the ideologies of this group and the ideologies of that group, and so on, so on, so on. Psychologically first, which is most important, not physiologically. If one understands very deeply the nature and the structure of conflict psychologically, and perhaps end it there, then you will be able to deal with the physiological factor. But if you are only concerned with the physiological factor, biological factor, to survive, then you will find it enormously difficult. You can't probably do it at all. So we are concerned, as we have leisure this morning, sitting down together in a beautiful place, with a lot of shadow, green trees and the mountains and the cool breeze. I hope it's not too cold. And having leisure, we are examining, exploring together the fact whether one can live a life that is really without conflict and therefore deep, with deep care, affection, attention. Right? Have you got the question? So we ask, why is there this conflict psychologically? First, psychologically, why? From ancient days, both historically and religiously, and economically and so on, there's been this division between the good and the bad. I do not know if you are aware of the ancient caves in south of France, north of Africa, in their caves, where there's a painting, probably they say it's 25,000 years old. Don't write to me and tell me you're wrong about the date. Where there is this constant, in symbolic form, the fight between the good and the evil. It existed in Sumeria, 7,000 BC, and down to the present time. The good opposed to the evil. The righteous and the unrighteous. The angel and the devil. We're all familiar with this. We are conditioned to this division. And as we have leisure, and I'm going to insist on that during this talk, we're going to investigate the fact whether there is this division at all, or only what is, and not its opposite. You understand? Suppose there is anger. That is the fact. That is what is. But not to be angry is not a fact. So, the fact and the non-fact. That is, the good opposed to the evil. And we are asking why human beings have divided this. How has it come about, this division? God and the devil, you know, the whole mythological as well as intellectual and so on. Why this division? Is it because we look at everything from the past? One of the factors. The past being all that you have learned, all that you have experienced. And living in the past, you look at the present, not as the present, but from the past. I wonder if you see it. Huh? Are we communicating with each other? I do hope. If I'm not, I would like to go over it in a different way. We're asking why human beings live in this division, therefore in conflict. We are saying one of the factors is this constant living in the past, which dictates all our action, which is the factor of the unconscious. I won't go into that for a moment, but later on. And I hope there are a lot of prominent psychologists here, analysts, I hope they'll go along with me slowly. We have never questioned this division. We have accepted it. Because we are very traditionalist by nature, habit. We don't want anything new. And that being a factor. Other factor is that we that there is a division between the observer and the observed. When you look at a mountain, you are looking at it as an observer. So there is an observer and the thing observed, which you call the mountain. The world is not the thing, right? The word mountain is not the mountain. But to us the world is very important. So when we look at that, instantly the response is, that's a mountain, the world. Now can you look at that mountain, at that thing called mountain, without the world? Because the world is a factor of division. I wonder if you're getting on this. When he says, my wife, the word my creates the division. When we talk about relationship. So, one of the factors of this division is the word, the name. And the word and the name is a memory, is part of thought. And when we look at a thing, the man or the woman or the mountain, the tree, whatever it is, division takes place when the name, the memory, thought comes into being. Right? So is there an observation without the word, without the name, without the attachment to that particular form and symbol, and to observe without all that? Is this getting difficult? So can you observe without the observer, who is the past? You understand? Who is the past? Who is the essence of all the memories, experiences, the reactions, and so on, which is the past, and look at something without the past, without the observer. When you do that, there is only the observed. So there is no division. You understand? And so no conflict, psychologically. Are you doing it, or are you just memorizing what is being said? Can you look at your girlfriend or wife or whatever your nearest intimate friend? Can you look, observe her or him without the name, the word, and all the experiences that you have gathered in that relationship, which is memory, which is the past, and look. And when you so look, what takes place? Then you are looking at him or her for the first time. You understand? For God's sake, get this. Don't please learn it. But actually, as your leisure, and we are talking over something which is tremendously important, and learning implies doing it now, not tomorrow, not another day, so that the observer is the observed. Therefore, there is only the observed. I wonder if you get this. Nobody is going to tell you all these things. No books, no gurus, no philosophers. You have to learn this from yourself. And you can only learn this from yourself when you have time, leisure, with mind not being occupied with all kinds of things. So we are saying it is possible to live a life that is completely psychologically free from all conflict. Has it happened to you? Please, this is not group therapy, which is an abomination to me personally, exposing our dirty laundry to each other. It has no meaning. But what we are actually doing is learning, not memorizing, but learning, observing the fact. And the fact will do everything if you left the fact alone. You understand? So, the fact is that human beings live in the past, and therefore there is always division between the past and the present, and the future. The past being the time. So we are saying, as long as, if I may go a little further, as long as there is a time interval in your observation, between the observed and the observed, there must be conflict. Please don't agree with me. See, find out if this is an actual fact to you. If this really, you have really understood this, not verbally, but are actually doing it. Because we are talking about a very, very serious problem, which is conflict, struggle in life. And when you do not struggle, you think you're lost. And thereby be afraid of losing, which is another form of conflict. So if you really have gone into this with the speaker together and discovered for yourself, not from the speaker, but discovered it for yourself, that as long as there is a division between the observer, the image maker, and the fact, which has no image, but only fact, as long as there is division, there must be everlasting conflict. That's a law. And can that conflict be ended? And we are pointing out or talking about it and learning that it can end. So when there is a psychological ending of suffering, ending of conflict, which is part of suffering, then how does that apply to our livelihood? How does that come? What am I to do if I live this kind of life? No conflict inwardly. You know what that means? When there's no conflict in thought, there's no conflict outside. Because there is no division between the inner and the outer. You understand? It's like ebb and flow. The sea coming in and sea going out. But when there is this psychologically no conflict, the ebb going out also no conflict. You understand? What shall I do? I have to earn a livelihood. Unfortunately. Personally, I don't. I don't because I have no problem about earning livelihood. But you have a problem about earning a livelihood. Why haven't I a problem about not earning a livelihood? Because, very simple. You all waiting? You're a strange people, all right. I've no problem because I don't mind what happens. You understand? I don't mind if I fail or succeed. I don't mind if I have money or not money. Personally, I have no money. Thank God. I don't want money. But I need food and clothes and shelter. And if somebody gives me, it's all right. If somebody doesn't, I live where I am. You understand my question? I have no problem. Because I don't demand anything from anybody or from life. I wonder if you understand this. So I've explained, but my way of living is entirely different from yours. So if I was, if I had to earn a livelihood, what shall I do? Having psychologically no conflict of any kind. You know what that means? How has it happened that I have no conflict? Is it a theory? Is it a desire which has been fulfilled? Is it an illusion? Is it something that I've hypnotized myself into? You understand what my question is? Or is it an absolute irrevocable fact which nobody can touch? It is inviolable. Violate. You know what inviolate means? That which cannot be damaged, which cannot be touched. So if that is so, then what shall we do? Together, it is together. What shall we do together to earn a livelihood? Because there is no conflict, therefore there is no ambition. Because there is no conflict, there is no desire to be something. Right? Because there is no conflict, because inwardly there is absolute something which is inviolable, which cannot be touched, which cannot be damaged, then I don't depend psychologically on another. Therefore there is no conformity, no imitation, and all that. So, not having all that, then I will do what I can in the world, be a gardener, a cook, anything. But you are so heavily conditioned to success and failure. Success in the world, money, position, prestige, you know, all that. And that's what we are struggling to for. But if none of that exists, you understand what takes place in a human being? In consciousness, in human consciousness, which is so heavily conditioned, right? Heavily conditioned to success and the fear of failure. To be something, not only outwardly, but inwardly. That's why you accept all the gurus. Because you hope he'll lead you to some illumination, some kind of illusory nonsense. Not that there is not something absolutely true, but nobody can lead you to it. So, our whole consciousness of most of it is conditioned to accept, to live a life of constant struggle. Because we want to achieve, we want to become, we want to play a certain part, we want to fulfill, we want, you know, which all implies the denial, please listen to this, the denial of what is and the acceptance of what should be. Because we deny what is and have created the ideal of what should be, there is conflict. But if you have the, but to observe actually what is, which means you have no opposite, only what is. Look, if you observe violence, the word violence is already contaminated, the very word, because there is people who approve of it, people who don't approve of it. So it's already warped. So we have to take, for instance, violence. And the whole philosophy of non-violence, both politically, religiously, and all the rest of it. That is, there is violence and its opposite, non-violence. The opposite exists because you know violence. And the opposite has its root in what is. Right? So, we think by having an opposite, by some extraordinary method or means, we'll get rid of the what is. Which is, what is and what should be. To achieve what should be, you need time. See what we go through, the misery, the conflict, the absurdity of all this. What is violence? And what should be is non-violence. So we say we need time to achieve non-violence because I'm conditioned to violence and to non-violence. I must have time, I must make an effort, I must struggle to be non-violent. That's the philosophy, that's the conditioning, that's the tradition, the good and the bad. Now can you put away the opposite and just look at violence, which is the fact. The non-violence is not a fact. The non-violence is an idea, is a concept, is a conclusion. But the fact is violence, that you are angry, that you hate somebody, that you want to hurt people. Anger, jealousy, all that's the implication of violence. That's the fact. Now, can you observe that fact without introducing its opposite? You understand? Then you have the energy which is being wasted in trying to achieve the opposite. You have all that energy to observe what is. In that observation, there is no conflict. So, what will a man do who has understood this extraordinary, complex existence based on violence, conflict, struggle, who is actually free of it, not theoretically about it, actually free, which means no conflict. What shall he do in the world? Will you ask me, or are you asking yourself this question? Will you ask this question? Please listen. Will you ask this question if you are inwardly, psychologically, completely free from conflict? Will you? Obviously not. It's only the man in conflict who says, if there is no conflict, I'll be ended. I'll be destroyed by society. Because society is based on conflict. But The society is what you have made of. You have made the society. You are responsible for the society. Because you are greedy, envious, violent, and society is what you are. So, there is no difference between you and society. You are society. These are facts. But when you separate yourself from society and say, I am different from society, which is such nonsense, then if there is complete transformation of the structure of society, which is violence, immorality, and all the rest of it, in you, you affect the consciousness of society. And when you are so free inwardly, will you ever ask that question, what shall I do in the outward world? Do answer it yourself, sir. Find out the answer for yourself. Because inwardly, you have completely transformed something which man is conditioned to. This constant battle. Have I answered the question? I've answered it for myself long ago. But will you put that question to yourself and find out, without any illusion, without any fantasy, without any desire to be or not be, which all brings conflict, find out for yourself the fact of it. That is a complete transformation inwardly of something which man has held as the most important thing, which is struggle, fight, conflict, and all the rest of it. So, the next thing is, if I may go on to something else, that our consciousness, if you have observed it, and we are, because we have leisure, we can look. Now, if you observe your consciousness, if you are aware of your consciousness, that is, are you aware of your consciousness? What you are? If you are aware, then you will see that your consciousness is in total, I'm using the word total in its absolute sense, not relative sense. In its absolute sense, your consciousness is in total disorder. Are you aware of that fact? To be aware implies a very simple, to be aware. You are aware of the trees, you are aware where you are sitting. I'm aware of the sun on my head, which I don't like. I'm aware of the various colors and so on that you, and aware outwardly. And inwardly, to be aware implies to be aware without any distortion. You can't distort that tree and saying that's an elephant. But you can very easily distort what you see inwardly. So, to be aware implies to be aware without any distortion of what is going on inside. Right? Are you so aware of your consciousness? If you are, you will find, don't you find, that it is contradictory, saying one thing, doing something else, wanting something else. You follow? The total movement within an area which is so small, and so no space, and in that little space, there is disorder. And are you aware that you are in total disorder? And ultimately, that disorder leading to neuroticism, obviously. and all the factors of modern society with psychologists, psychoanalysts, psychotherapists, you know, all that stuff going on. If you are aware in the sense that you watch yourself, which is your consciousness, without any disorder, without any distortion, is that possible? That is only possible when the observer is the observed. You understand? When there is no, when the observer is the observed, there is no distortion. He sees what is. But if the observer exists, then he distorts what he sees. You understand this question? Is this clear? So can you observe? Is there an observation of oneself, which is our consciousness, and see the actual fact of its disorder, of one's disorder, in daily life? Not only outwardly, but much more deeply, inwardly. Outwardly, we are very orderly. Some of us, at least. Because it's compulsory, it's becoming more and more. You have to be orderly in order, etc. I won't go into all that. But inwardly, are you in order? Or there's disorder? Can you observe this fact? And what takes place when you observe choicelessly, which means without any distortion, what takes place? You understand my question? Because where there is disorder, there must be conflict. Where there is absolute order, there is no conflict. And we are saying there is an absolute order, not relative order. And that can only come about naturally, easily, without any conflict, only when one is aware of one's of oneself as a consciousness, observe the confusion and the turmoil, the contradiction, outwardly and inwardly, and observe without any distortion, then out of that comes naturally, sweetly, easily, an order which is irrevocable.